right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff. Give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now and give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now, get ready to go. She ain't moving slow, she's taking control. Pushing the pedal through the floor. I'm begging for more, you better hold on tight.
And welcome to Alouettes Flight Deck, the podcast dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football. I'm Tim Capper, along with my co-host Cliffy D. It was, I know, on all fairness, yes, there were two great finales this week in the CFL. I know the guys are pit pimples, are probably rolling their eyes. not the same type as you know, saying goodbye to Taylor Field, but it was nice to actually get the win that the Alouettes did for their home finale for the 2016 season. And obviously it's the next home game for the Alouettes will be the 2017, I guess we could say preseason opener sometime in June of 2017. Mm-hmm. So we do have some, and that's our first, it wasn't as bad as some other teams in the losing streaks, but it's our first, it's the Alouettes with their win over Calgary, the 17-8 win over Calgary. It was their first two-game win streak, I think, since last year.
That's correct.
At least since last year.
True. And, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, this is what we have to be excited about, folks. I mean, it's been a rough season. There's no question about that. But, I mean, the fact that we decided to make this our last stand, if you will, you know, like the last home game of the season, you know, all you can ask for really is, as a fan of this team, is, you know, just show up and make an effort. And that's what Montreal did. Granted, they weren't playing Bo Levi Mitchell, and it seemed like a lot of the other players were just sort of just taking it easy, just trying not to get hurt, which, again, I completely do not blame them for whatsoever, because they've got a much bigger game ahead of them in a few weeks. So, I mean, this was kind of like a prevent defense, if you will. Like, these guys were just doing everything they could not to get hurt. So
didn't work, by the way.
No, it really didn't.
I mean, I feel for Stampeder fans, and looking at this, they're trying to go on and take it. I'm not saying take it easy, but looking forward to the bye week. Second straight year that we've had a league leader have a bye week going into the final week of the regular season. And I mean, that's a couple of things that we're going to talk about, because I really have some issues with what Calgary is doing, and it really makes me wonder. But first we got to talk about all the pauses here from the Alouettes.
Yeah.
Obviously, Vernon Adams Jr. had his second start as Alouettes quarterback, and before he got, it looked a lot worse in person, so we didn't really see any tweets. We didn't see, you know, even, I think some of the guys in the press box were running the same thing, but Vernon Adams' injury looked a lot worse than what it actually was. But before we get to that, how would you rate him before he went out? I mean, overall, I mean, I think he did what he had to do, but it's just at the very beginning, you know, not very much scoring again, pluses for the Owls defense, but it just seemed. Did it seem to you that we were falling back into the same old when it comes to quarterbacks and not getting anything going at all?
I don't want to say that necessarily that was the case. I mean, you definitely did see a lot of a bit of a conservative approach, if you will, from the offense. I mean, it's so tough right now, because I think Vernon Adams, like, he's really hasn't had a whole lot of reps throughout the entire season. So, I mean, like, he's still just sort of finding his way a little bit. So, I mean, like, this is kind of uncharted territory for him a little bit. I mean, yes, he's been a starter in college and all that, but I mean, professional ranks as a whole different environment altogether. So, I mean, for him to come into this game and play the way that he did, I mean, it wasn't awe-inspiring at first, but I mean, he also wasn't awe-inspiring in Saskatchewan either 2 weeks ago. And at the end of the day, it took a little while for him to get going, but I think once he finally established himself, got his groove going, things started working in his favor. So, I mean, like, there was definitely a lot of positive there. Like, by the time they got to halftime and they got that touchdown drive going, I mean, that was just one of those little instances where you see that, okay, we've got something here. I really think that with a little bit more seasoning and with a offensive line that can keep him upright, I mean, to his credit, he was only sacked twice, which I guess it's progress in a way when you think about it.
It is.
All things considered, I mean, could have been a lot worse. But, I mean, that first half, it was quiet. But, I mean, it was, again, the kind of game that I expected Montreal and both Montreal and Calgary to play, all things considered. Because Calgary was just doing everything they could not to get hurt. Montreal wanted to show out and wanted to at least put together a decent effort for the fans in attendance. So it was about what I expected from him, more or less. I would have liked to see what could have happened had he not gotten hurt. But, I mean, what can you say? You can't predict injuries, unfortunately. So the best thing we can do now at this point is it doesn't seem like it was too bad. I did see him after the game, and he was in pretty good spirits. Didn't look to be too, too bad. So I think it was just more of a precautionary measure more than anything else. And just we'll see what happens in Hamilton on Saturday. It looks like based on practice today, like he was able to get out there and throw the ball a little bit. So I guess we'll see how the rest of the week goes.
Yeah. And what they were saying, and by the way, before he came out, he was 11 of 14 for 106 yards. No interceptions, no touchdowns. I don't know. I don't know. A lot of people I know have probably knocked him for how short he is. That's a hard thing to say when we have Stefan Logan on the team. I mean, he's not really your prototypical CFL quarterback, could you really say? I mean, isn't he shorter than Flutie? And that's saying a bit.
Well, and again, I think we're starting to see a lot more of this trend of trying to emulate the NFL as far as getting the big, tall, lanky quarterbacks and trying to bulk them up a little bit. So, I mean, it all depends. I mean, like, when I look at Adams, I definitely don't see an NFL quarterback in him whatsoever. I mean, even though you got, like, Russell Wilson, for example, who's still playing at an elite level in that league, could Vernon Adams be the Russell Wilson of the CFL? I think it's possible. I mean, at the end of the day, it's going to come down to the system that he's in and just what he can do. Like, what can his coaching staff do for him to help make him a better player? And I think that's right. Going to be key going into next season, because he's definitely making his case to be the starter for next year, as is Rakeem Cato. So, and it's going to have to be one of those two guys.
Jonathan Crompton into that fix, too. I hate to tell you, even though he was, you know, supposed to come off the sixth game and was put back on the sixth game, it really makes you wonder.
Well, that's it. I mean, at the end of the day, you still got to be able to find that future quarterback in Montreal. I mean, there's still a lot of things that have to happen first. I mean, we still have to make sure who the coaching staff is going to be for 2017. I mean, is it going to be Jacques Chaptelain, or are they actually just going to say the hell with it, scrap everybody, and just start brand new? I mean, there's a lot to consider as well. But, I mean, if for just these brief shining moments, you definitely got to see what each quarterback brings to the table. And it's definitely going to make whomever the coach is in Montreal next year.
Right.
It's definitely going to give them a lot to consider when it comes to the quarterbacking position.
Right. Now, Vernon, one thing we sad I didn't have, but for Vernon Adams last week when he made his debut with the Alouettes, Cliff, Vernon Adams actually became the 38th quarterback to make his debut with the Alouettes. 38th in their history. These quarterbacks are 15-23 in their first game. Now, what's funny, he got the win. Everybody's talking about, you know, you get the start, you're either going to get the win or you're going to get the loss, no matter if somebody else comes in, right?
That's right.
And that's what we were talking about before, Rakeem Cato coming in. Came in late in the third. But either way, because the Alouettes got the win, Adams actually was credited with the win. And Vernon Adams Jr. actually became the second quarterback, along with Jonathan Crompton, to win their first two career starts with the Alouettes. And it's funny, of all the quarterbacks that we have had and all the names that we have had in our history, that only twice have we had quarterbacks win their first two career starts. And it's nothing against Jonathan Crompton, because he, you know, as we all know, he went on that run back in 2014. And now Vernon Adams is number two. It's funny. It really is hard to believe, eh, Cliff? I mean, considering how many quarterbacks we've had.
Mm-hmm. And again, people always talk about the coaching or the quarterbacking carousel here in Montreal. I mean, but it's really only been within the past couple of years that we've gone through this, really. I mean, like I said, after years and years of Anthony Calvillo and other backup quarterbacks just essentially, you know, retiring without even really truly seeing the field. And now we're actually getting to see different quarterbacks and just see how they operate within, you know, within Montreal's scheme. So I'm definitely curious. Like I said, it does make you really think about what's going to happen in the future. Like I had talked about at the start of the season that Kevin Gillen was not going to be a long-term solution for Montreal, and it turns out he wasn't. it's really going to have to come down to one of these two young guys, or even now, as you mentioned, Crompton. If he's healthy and ready to go, then yeah, he definitely deserves to be in the mix as well. So, I mean, it's definitely going to make for an interesting offseason and also to training camp when things get started up back or things get started back up in June of 2017.
Right, and I've actually spoken with a couple of CFL insiders that I know, and they've said actually that they think that Jonathan Crompton would be the leading candidate to get the starting job. And it's just for the fact that I think what we're talking about before is that he has the height. He seems to have an entire package. Because I remember I was talking to you at halftime, and I said to you specifically that Cato has the more pure throwing motion and how, you know, might a tighter spiral in how he threw compared to Vernon Adams. So it's, you know, it makes you think. It really makes you think, what is going to happen? Are they going to go after a free agent quarterback? And we're going to go in, and I know you mentioned it now. I'm going to say it again. I had to mention it, is that, you know, you gave me crap for basically saying that we needed Drew Tate. And it's basically, you said to me at the game today after the other day, it's like, so how do you like your pick now?
Well, normally I hate to say I told you so, but no, I'm sorry. Like I said, the Drew Tate that you saw on Sunday is the Drew Tate you'd be getting. And that's right. That's the unfortunate part. Like I said,
I went back and checked his stats. His stats were not as impressive as I thought they were.
Again, he's got this Machiavellian way of convincing people that he's worth considering. And I think a lot of it is just the fact that he's a name. He is a name. I mean, he did have a very prolific college career with the University of Iowa and managed to turn that into, you know, he did manage to supplant Henry Burris back in 2011. So that definitely made a lot of people, that set a lot of tongues wagging, actually. And the fact that the Stampeders saw fit to trade Burris as a result of Drew Tate's play, that definitely said a lot too. But also what said a lot too is that next season, the guy that they traded Henry Burris for, Kevin Glenn, ends up taking over the starting role because Drew Tate really is not that good a quarterback. He also got hurt a lot too. So, I mean, that didn't help the cause any either. But once again, it just comes down to, yeah, Drew Tate's a name, but he's not the kind of guy that you want leading your team. And he has never expressed any interest truly in the past couple of years of doing anything other than riding Bo Levi Mitchell's coattails. I mean, you'd even take a look at the current situation. When it comes to short yardage situation for Calgary, who do they call on? Not Drew Tate. It's Andrew Buckley, their third stringer.
Yeah, exactly. Well, to be fair, that's the norm. Think about that for a second. And I understand where you're going, but look at most teams in the CFL. Even the Alouettes did it. You know, once A.D. Mack was gone, as an example. But a lot of people do use their third stringer. You know, Vernon Adams was used. He was used as our third down back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so was Brandon Bridge. I get your point, though. I understand your point. But what about in the conversation? Could we throw Travis Lule into this conversation?
I wouldn't.
I mean, the dude was amazing, MOP, and after being hurt, it just – I don't know. Obviously, Jonathan Jennings took over. Man, I don't know. I mean, it's –
I mean, nothing against Lule, but I mean, I've just found he's had one good year in 2011. He played absolutely outstanding football, but then ever since then, it was just injury after injury, and just every time he seemed like he'd get himself back on track, he'd get injured again. And then now you see it, like he's essentially lost his job to Jonathan Jennings, and he claims to be okay with being the backup and being ready to go at a moment's notice, but I look at what Jonathan Jennings does in BC, and I just don't see him ever relinquishing that role. The one name that I would throw out there, honestly, as far as if the Alouettes were to go get another quarterback to compete with Vernon Adams, Rakeem Cato, and to a lesser extent, Jonathan Crompton, guy who's going to be playing in Ottawa this Saturday. I think it's Saturday. Yeah, this Saturday he's playing. He's actually going to be starting the game for the Red Blacks, is Brock Jensen. Now, that's a guy who everything I've seen of this guy, there is definitely a lot of talent. There's a lot of raw, natural talent there that I think in the right system could absolutely work.
I know, but that might be the issue, that the word raw may be the issue, because we have a tendency to have all this raw talent at that backup quarterback for the Owls.
But I think Anthony Calvillo would see someone like Brock Jensen and want to mold him into a true superstar. And if you bring him in here with no pressure whatsoever, kind of like what he's doing with Ottawa right now, like, because right now you've got Henry Burris and you've got Trevor Harris. They're both like, they're like 1A, 1B when it comes to the quarterbacking situation with the Red Blacks. And Brock Jensen's just kind of like the, I won't necessarily say the forgotten man, but I mean, like, he's only now just starting to get a little bit of action. And that's just as a result of the Red Blacks wanting to rest Henry Burris for the playoffs, which is, again, a very smart move.
Right. I want to talk about more about the East, about what's happening this coming weekend. It's not something that we normally do, but one last thing I want to talk about this game, and I think it's really detrimental, I think, to the Calgary Stampeders, is exactly the situation that happened this week, is that Bo Levi did not start. He did not play a series. He did not play a quarter. He did not play a half. He didn't play. Summarily, he's going to go 4 weeks without full contact. 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
What, to me, that if anything, you can practice all you want. But, you know, this is the playoffs coming up. This will be the West Final. Does it set them up to possibly be very rusty? They get a team that maybe looks and sees what the Alouettes have done the past two times that these two teams have played. You know, could there be an upset in the West? I think, if anything, I would have at least had him play for at least a quarter, if that.
And I completely get that. I definitely think that would have been ideal because, yeah, when you think about the fact that you're right, 4 weeks off, essentially, or just not playing in any serious game time situation, it's tough. Like, I understand the concern of sending him out there in what was essentially a nothing game versus Montreal, and God forbid he should get hurt and miss the entire Grey Cup playoffs.
Like a preseason.
Yeah. And again, I get that line of reasoning. It makes 100% sense. But at the same time, too, you don't want the rust to build up either. So, I mean, it's kind of a catch-22 when you think about it. I mean, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't when it comes to playing your arguably the best quarterback in this Canadian Football League right now. And it's tough. You also kind of want to see what you have if something happens. At least now you know what you're going to get with Drew Tate, and to a lesser extent with Andrew Buckley as well. Mm-hmm. So it was important to get those guys reps as well. But yeah, there's good and bad when you think about it, to being such a dominant team and not playing for a couple of weeks until, or having a couple of weeks off until your next big important football game. So yeah,
4 weeks is a lot.
It is a lot.
So Rakeem Cato comes in the beginning of a late third quarter, right away, throws a gorgeous touchdown pass to Tiquan Underwood. I mean, what a pass.
Everything about that was, like I said, picture perfect. Like, mm-hmm. The pass, he just seemed to drop it perfectly. Like, that, you talk about like Ricky Ray. Like, he was one of the best overall passers in this league. Like, that was a Ricky Ray-esque pass that Rakeem Cato threw to Tyquan Underwood. And like I said, everything from start to finish, it was just poetry in motion. And you're not going to get much better than that. Like, as far as a pure touchdown pass goes, that was it. That was the very definition of a beautiful touchdown pass by Rakeem Cato. It's just absolutely outstanding.
Yeah. And then you have Cato's phenomenal run. I mean, it's not something that we I would expect this from Vernon Adams, but seeing that run by Cato, 73 yards, I think it was.
Yep. I mean, starting deep in Calgary's own end, and the guy just, like, you talk about the read option, like, whether it's still an effective style of football. I mean, listen, with the right quarterback, the right system, it still works. I mean, this is the kind of thing that you're used to seeing. If you watch NFL, watch guys like Russell Wilson, Colin Kaepernick, Cam Newton. Like, these are the guys that run read option extremely well. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Rakeem Cato, like, you wonder sometimes just how he makes those decisions in the pocket. And it just seemed like he's always got that kind of deer in the headlights look about him. And it's usually en route to him getting sacked for six or seven times, as he has been in recent games. But something just seemed to click on that particular play with him. Like, he just looked, he checked down receivers, he looked at everybody, there's just no option. So, you know what, just pull it in, tuck it, run. And he found the hole, and he was off to the races. It was absolutely outstanding. Like, I really, truly thought if the football field was just a little bit wider, I could have turned that corner just at the last moment. that would have been a touchdown all day long. But I mean, for him to run 73 yards like that was just absolutely outstanding. It's just unfortunate that we didn't really get any points out of it. But still, you want to get the crowd excited. You want to get them up off their feet.
Don't remind me about that fourth down play at the goal line. I was like, what are you doing? I remember I was telling you of a play that they should have done. You know, a naked bootleg.
Oh, absolutely.
But then I was like, what? What are you doing? I don't know. It didn't make any sense.
Yeah, you just throw your hands up in the air like, welp, what are you going to do?
Now, my thought, too, though, is that with him coming in and him doing as well as he did, I'm thinking, okay, well, there's the backup quarterback, Rakeem Cato, that we know. It still made me think, is he still a starter quality?
Mm. You know? And, yeah, I mean, like I said, you have an outstanding game like that. I mean, all things considered, both quarterbacks, for the most part, played a pretty decent game. Wasn't complete, but they both played what I felt was a decent game. But, I mean, two half-decents doesn't necessarily make a whole. And what's going to come down to is one of these guys is going to have to put together a complete game from start to finish. And Rakeem Cato's had numerous opportunities to do that this year and, for the most part, really only did it once when he played against Toronto. Like, he had an absolutely outstanding game there for Jacques Chaplin's head coaching debut. But since then, it just hasn't quite been the same. Whereas Vernon Adams, he comes in, didn't play outstanding in his debut, but overall put together a decent enough game. Like, he did just enough to win the game. So, like, you can't just have good efforts. Like, you got to have outstanding efforts, and you got to be able to do it consistently if you want to win in this league. And whether or not either one of these guys can do it remains to be seen. Like I said, there's still a lot to consider here, especially when it comes to offense and just what's being drawn up for these guys. And if they can find a way to just incorporate more of their style of game into the offense, I think that's going to make a huge difference going forward in 2017.
Yeah, it'll be a very interesting offseason. Obviously, we still have one more game to go in the regular season. But besides that, defense obviously gets a huge A+ from me all the way. Again, this is a championship caliber defense, but unfortunately, we have a 5-cent offense at the moment. So they've done what they can do to keep the Alouettes in the games, and sure enough, everybody in the defense is doing well. Bear Woods is still in the hunt of things for the overall tackle lead in the CFL this year. Sure. He would have to be, and I'm saying this now, I think he will be the Eastern finalist for Defensive Player of the Year, but we'll see. I know there's a huge conversation about who is more worthy to possibly get the Defensive Player of the Year this year. But and then Nick Lewis. What can we say about Nick Lewis?
Man, that guy is just... just an outstanding, outstanding individual, both on and off the field. But, I mean, like, we talk about the way he plays this game. Like I said, this guy is the most outstanding player for the Montreal Alouettes. There's simply no question about it. The way he approaches this game, the way he just carries not just himself, but the way he carries his team on his back and wills them is just – outstanding. Like, I mean, there's just no other word to describe what Nick Lewis is to this Montreal Alouettes organization. I mean, he's just a tremendous, tremendous player. What more can we say? I mean, the guy he's setting records. I mean, the guy was supposed to be washed up when Calgary essentially decided not to sign him again after the Grey Cup in 2014. The guy was supposed to be essentially left for dead, but he knew deep down that, you know what, I still got a lot to give. I still got a lot left in the tank. And he showed that. Like, last year when he started with Montreal, played very solid. I mean, especially too in a very difficult environment. And everybody always wonders too, like, after playing so long in Calgary's system, how is he going to adapt to a completely different organization altogether? And for the most part, he did very well. And this year as well, he's just proven himself over and over again. Like, he talks a lot, but man, does he back it up. And that's what you want. You want someone that is going to talk the talk and walk the walk. And that's what Nick Lewis does every single game. And how do you not love this guy? I mean, this is the kind of guy as a football player you want your kids to emulate, because he just brings that lunch pail mentality. You know, he brings his boots and goes to work. I mean, that's what you want mm-hmm. in a football player. I mean, not just as a receiver, but just overall as a football player, you are not going to find anyone better than Nick Lewis. I mean, the guy is just – I can't say enough good words about him. I saw him after the game as well, and he still thinks he can go. He still thinks he can get at least one more year out of his body, and I really hope he does. I really hope he finds a way to reach his goal. He had said, by hook or by crook, I'm going to be playing at the Grey Cup in Ottawa next year. And I hope he does. I really hope he does. And I really hope he does it with the Montreal Alouettes. But no matter what, Nick's going to find a way to win. And that's just the kind of personality he is. That's the kind of player he is. And like I said, what more can I say about the guy? The guy is just fantastic. Yeah, absolutely fantastic.
That's what I was going to say. Unfortunately, he is a free agent this year. So it's going to be, I mean, very interesting. Considering that the Owls may actually, it's weird to say this, they may actually luck out and not get the number one pick overall this year. for his efforts, Nick Lewis became the fourth all time in receptions in CFL history. I was able to surpass two people. And lastly, we cannot forget, because this, you know, in multiple years, we've always been complaining about, we've had good returners and punt returners, and they've been consistent. But getting Stephon Logan, he's been one of the most consistent returners for the Alouettes, surpassing what any the Owls have had 2 years prior to that. And we had some pretty good names.
Mm-hmm.
He's just been very consistent. I mean, he himself broke his own team record this past week for kickoff return yards in a season. He actually broke his record from last year. But he's on pace. He's still on pace to break it for punt returns and for total yards. But that one's going to be a little bit more challenging to do with only one game left, unless he has a monster game next week.
And anything is possible. I mean, listen, the Alouettes do typically play well overall at Tim Hortons Field. So maybe he's been looking for that breakout game. So, I mean, it'd be kind of funny that it would come at the very last game of the season for Montreal. But if somehow Stephon Logan can just break out, and if the special teams can just clear a friggin' lane for the guy, he would easily take one back to the house. I mean, you could tell he's chomping at the bit to do so. And just for whatever reasons, just never see that. And more often than not, it's because he runs into his own player. So, I mean, like,
yeah, he had another 40 yards this week, I think, that were wiped out by a legal block penalty.
Yep. Yeah. I said, I give Kavis Reed full credit for all the work he's done. He's improved the special teams of the Alouettes tremendously. But, man, he still has a ways to go.
Yeah, it's improved. It's improved. But it's just like, come on, man.
Well, I guess once you hit rock bottom, you have nowhere to go but up. So
yeah, that's true. That's true. Anything else that did you take away from the home finale for 2016?
Again, there wasn't really a whole lot of outstanding plays overall, other than the ones we had mentioned. But
and we actually outdrew the Impact playoff game. I thought that was going to be a huge factor. Remember when we first came into the stadium, I was thinking, oh, when we were looking at the north stands, we're like, oh, man, this is going to be bad. But
it was looking a little sparse. But you know what? At the end of the day, people love football of all kinds. And I think people realize that this is still going to be the last Alouettes game, and I guess they're hoping that, you know, maybe the Impact can work something out and advance in the playoffs, and maybe they'll have a chance to go see another game at Stade Saputo. So, and I hope that's the case too, because you know what? I believe in all the Montreal teams. I want all the Montreal teams to do well, no matter what the sport is. And I think this past Sunday was the Alouettes day, as far as posting a big win and getting the crowd out for one last hurrah at the stadium.
You know what's funny? If the Owls do win next week, they're going to have 7 wins, and they will tie Hamilton for wins in the East. They won't surpass them because of the season series. Yeah, the tiebreakers.
Yeah.
But that's the other thing I want to talk about. Let's switch subjects here, and let's talk about the East. Grab a drink, grab your nearest elixir, and let's talk about the East. So we're going to have – it is very possible, Cliff, that we are going to have two teams go into the playoffs for the East with an under 500 record. We're already at 1 now with Hamilton being currently at 7-10. But if Ottawa – and by the way, who you're saying they're starting next week
Brock Jensen?
Yeah, it really doesn't, to me, it really doesn't sound like they really care, since they already are going to be hosting the East Final. But if they lose, and because of the tie that Ottawa has, we are going to, if Ottawa loses, we are going to have, for the first time ever in CFL history, a division winner with an under 500 record.
That's not exactly something to celebrate, but it is definitely history making, that's for sure.
Right.
Yeah, it just really speaks to just how awful the Eastern Division has been overall this season.
That's the thing. Would you call it awful, or would you call it parody?
To be fair,
I mean, it's we know how strong the West is. Okay, just by the, you know, even though the Alouettes did stop Calgary's streak this year with the win on Sunday, we know the West, you know, summarily is pretty strong. But would you call it parody rather than crappy?
No, I'd call it crappy.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, there is something to be said about parody, but at the same time, the level of play just really, you see it too, especially when teams like the Western teams play the Eastern teams. I mean, for the most part, like you said, it's been Western dominance.
Yeah, but that's been like that for years.
Has it though? Because I mean,
it has. The West has seemingly been dominant over the West over the East in recent memory. So it's, you know, but the big thing is coming up is obviously the crossover, and it hasn't been confirmed yet which team's going to be crossing over based on the results coming up this next week for the games that are in the West. But as you and I both know, crossing over has never been a good thing for the West team.
Mm-hmm.
They've made it as far as
the Eastern Final.
I think both times versus Montreal.
Yep.
So they would have to obviously get past Hamilton, whomever is going to be. Now the teams that are possibly being able to get a crossover, which team has the worst chance at advancing, and which team has the best chance at advancing to the East Final? To the East Final.
I think if somehow BC could make its way, if somehow they cross over, which theoretically could happen, I think they would actually, of the three teams that could cross over, BC, Winnipeg, and Edmonton, I would think BC would have the best chance to beat both Hamilton and Ottawa mm-hmm. on the road. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't be easy, of course, because like you said, there's just something about crossing over the East. Everybody wants to think it's the path of least resistance, but like you said, truthfully, it really hasn't been. I mean, yeah, you might get lucky and get past whoever the second place team is in the East, but once you get to that Eastern Final, it's a whole different story altogether. And say what you will about Ottawa, they haven't been the greatest team this year, but I mean, TD Place by and large is still a very intimidating place to play in, and I guarantee you that place is going to be sold out, and that place is going to be jumping come November 20th. No matter who the opponent is, whether it's going to be Hamilton or one of these Western teams, you got to know that these fans are going to be amped for this game. So it's not going to be as easy as most of the people out West want to think it's going to be. If they thought that maybe the best strategy would be to avoid having to go play in Calgary, because you know what? You may end up having to play Calgary anyways in the Grey Cup. So your brilliant strategy may not seem so brilliant after all. But to want to go through the East in order to do so, if I'm Winnipeg or Edmonton, I don't think it's going to be that much of a cakewalk, to be honest with you. I think, like I said, of all the three teams to do it, I think when it comes to overall talent, like if somehow it works out that BC were to cross over, I could honestly see them being able to get past Hamilton and possibly even Ottawa as well. But I mean, I think BC is probably going to end up staying in the West. I have a feeling it's going to be, I'll go ahead and I'll say, I think it's going to be Winnipeg that crosses over.
And I was going to say, and you know, I know how well the team did this year and heck of improvements and whatnot. And I was actually going to agree with you on that one. I think that if Winnipeg does cross over, they are going to be I think they will have the least chance of advancing.
Yeah, and it's just because Winnipeg, I mean, for the most part, have been a fairly good team, but their play, especially as of late, has been very inconsistent. Like, they just can't seem to close more than anything else. And they had their lunch eaten for them by Ottawa at home, of all places, too. So, I mean, I think a lot of their play calling has become very predictable in the past couple of weeks, and Matt Nichols is a pretty decent quarterback, but again, to win in the playoffs, you need to be better than just decent. You can't just coast by in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So I have a feeling it's going to end up being Winnipeg that crosses over, and they might be able to get past Hamilton. It won't be easy, but they might get past. But if they do, they're sure as hell not getting past Ottawa in Ottawa. I can pretty much guarantee you that right now.
Yeah, the last team that actually made the crossover was the BC Lions back in 2014, and then they got shellacked by the Alouettes at home.
They sure did.
50-17.
Yep. And I'm pretty sure even back then, even though Montreal, because remember, Montreal started 1-7 that year, mm-hmm. and just had to fight and scratch their way just to get to an even record. And I'm pretty sure a lot of folks out west had thought, okay, well, this is going to be a gimme for the BC Lions because they've been playing really well. But unfortunately, they were just not quite as good as what the two teams from Alberta were. And sure enough, BC crosses over and they got thumped. They got thumped by Montreal because you know what? Montreal was not a bad team. They just had some bad luck to start the year, but they got their act together and they honestly could have gone all the way to the Grey Cup if a couple more things fell in their favor. Wow. So as far as crossing over goes, I mean, yeah, it's great that you're in the playoffs, but I mean, at the end of the day, you still have to put those wins together. And like I said, Hamilton right now, yeah, they got Zach Caleros back, but how ready is he going to be to go? And truthfully, even when he came back this year, it's been middling at best, quite frankly. I think they've got a lot of talent on the Tiger Cats, but I think when it comes to Zach Caleros, he hasn't been the savior that they've needed him to be. And I think that's going to be a very telling story, not just this Saturday against Montreal, but possibly in this Eastern semifinal against whomever. I think that's going to be a really interesting story to look at next week or so.
It just looks like, to me, except for the Western Division, this week in the East, it just seems to be that these are just glorified preseason games just by who's starting in both these games.
I believe it was Rouge Radio on Twitter today said that this is week 20, also known as mail it in week.
Yeah, which I despise. I'm more interested in the games in the Western Division this week than I am, obviously, except for the Owls game too. I want them to win, but it's just so frustrating. I mean, I understand that nothing is up for grabs in the East, but everything is up for grabs in the West except for who's going to be hosting the West final. So, I don't get it. I don't get it at all. I know I joked about it at the beginning of the show. We just have to at least mention it. Talking about the grand old man. Can we call him grand old man? We can't call him grand old lady. The grand old man himself, Taylor Field, which, by the way, I'd found out. I did not know this. And I guess I'm either a bad CFL or CFL fan, or I just really didn't know the history of the Regina/Saskatchewan Rough Riders. I did not know that Taylor Field used to be a ball stadium.
Baseball stadium?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had no clue. I saw some pictures online. I was like, holy crap, that's cool.
That's very cool, yeah. No, it used to be a baseball stadium. You're absolutely right.
So caught just bits and pieces of it. They went all out, the closing ceremonies in Regina. And they put on a great show. They really did. I mean, they also had I wish they would do it at an Owls game once in a while. Was it the Grand Pixel picture? Did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
If anybody doesn't know what we're talking about, it's where basically it's a giant camera it's like a 360 camera at center field, but yet it's so high resolution that you're able to zoom in enough and be able to tag yourself in the crowd.
Oh yeah.
And that's cool. I think they've done it for some Grey Cups in the past too, if I remember correctly.
And I know like some college football games, they'll do something like that too, which makes it even more impressive when you consider that those can get like 70,000-80,000 fans in. And if you're able to point yourself out in one of those areas, then yeah, that's nothing short of impressive right there too.
Yeah.
But to be able to do something like that for the last game at Taylor Field is, it's just one of those nice little things that fans are definitely going to remember. And it's just one more good memory of that old barn before they moved to the new digs. And yeah, I mean, I'm really happy that I had the chance to go out there and experience the atmosphere, the Riders game day experience there.
Yes.
And yeah, I'm really hoping that they continue that, like a lot of those traditions and whatnot. I really hope they bring that to the new stadium as well. And I hope they develop a new era, a great new era of football out there in Regina, because like I said, these fans are definitely passionate. I mean, we can make fun of them all we want, but at the end of the day, they are definitely great football fans and they definitely deserve to get the accolades that they do. So
yeah, it's Regina's one of the places I would love to visit. And it's, I never did. I was unable to go to Taylor Field and kind of reminds him very similar to, you know, those of you who know me and my football history is that, you know, when it comes to the Arena League, there are places that I wish I had gone to and I really didn't. And one, you know, as an example, Regina and Taylor Field, it was the Veterans Auditorium over in Des Moines, home of the former home of the Iowa Barnstormers when they were in the Arena Football League, you know, Kurt Warner's team where he got started, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So they put on a great show. Just some of the stuff that they did was absolutely phenomenal, and props to everybody. And I hope you know, the guys over there at Piffle's Pod enjoyed. I'm sure you enjoyed what they did, and enjoy. You know, first game. You know, I'm curious to know if they're going to have the first game of the season next year. If it's going to be at the new Mosaic, I don't know. We know it would make for good TV. We know they draw very well on television when it comes to the Saskatchewan Roughrider games, no matter what their record is. They always draw in stadium, but they always seem to draw on TV too.
Well, I'm thinking too, like Canada Day is usually like the Canada Day weekend is when the league gets underway essentially. Like I couldn't think of a better way to kick off Canada Day than would be at New Mosaic Stadium. The Riders hosting whomever, really. I think it would make for a very awesome atmosphere.
Right. Yeah, I do too. One thing we want to talk about, and it just seems to be the doesn't really seem to be the issue du jour, but it really just seems to be an issue of the season this year when it comes to, I think this is a, and I jokingly say this, I think 2016, it was the year of the league press release saying that they were wrong. So I think they set their own record of futility. And just this past week, a complete and utter, I don't get it. I saw the play. I'm sure you did too. Edmonton-Hamilton. How referees can botch that call on the onside kick is completely beyond me. And on top of that, you know, poor Hamilton gets another penalty for unsportsmanlike conduct.
Yeah, well, credit to Jeff Reinbold. At least he kept his hands to himself, unlike the head coach.
Oh, if anybody hadn't seen it, go over to Third Down Nation and check out the picture. Whoever caught that picture, I don't know if it was a wire photo or not, but the picture of Jeff Reinbold, the way it was taken in between the players' helmets and stuff like that, it was centered directly on him. What a shot. You could tell how ticked he was.
Oh, he was fit to be tied, and I don't blame him. I don't blame anyone on that that Hamilton team for being upset because, I mean, it was just a series of blown calls this year. And like I said, you want so badly this league to be better, and it's getting tiresome listening to, well, we regret that we missed this, and we're sorry we missed that. And you know what?
But I thought that's what the command center was all about.
Right. So if you can't get the replay right, then why even bother having it? I mean, I don't want to sound like these old fuddy-duddies that, you know, piss and moan about the fact that, you know, well, you know, you should trust human judgment and you can't rely on technology for everything and blah, blah, blah. Shut up. At the end of the day, this is what technology is for. But you know what? If you don't use it properly, then what the hell's the point? It doesn't make any sense to have all these cameras focusing on the game and you get all these great angles. I admit I've never been inside the CFL command center, unlike our buddy Safamod over at Piffle's Pod.
Lucky boy. But, lucky boy.
Yes, indeed. But, you know, like there's got to be how do you blow all these calls and do it so consistently? It's maddening. Like how are you supposed to sell this sport to everybody and get people interested and keep them interested in it when you can't even get these frigging calls right? It's sad, really. I mean, I don't even want to be mad anymore, but it's just like, damn, like what else do you got to do to make this work? I mean, it's just
now, not only did the refs get it wrong, was there, I'm trying to remember, was there a particular reason, was it not challenged or was that not challengeable?
I don't know if it was necessarily,
remember.
I think it was just the fact that it couldn't be challenged or the challenge would have to come from up above because it was under 2 minutes or under three minutes, sorry.
So that, again, that doesn't make any sense.
So again, like it's completely at the discretion of the command center. So, I mean, again, it's just, it's just one of those things that, you know, people that like to rag on this league and call it Bush and everything like that. Well, this is just another prime example for them to use as to why the CFL is considered second tier by a lot of people. And when you hear stuff like that and you see it, you're like, well, it's kind of hard to argue that. Like, it's, and it sucks because, again, like I said, you want so well for this league, but they just can't stop stepping on their own toes. And it's unfortunate, really. That's perhaps the best way I could use it. The best word to use to describe it is just unfortunate that you just can't seem to get ahead of yourself when it comes to these things. And these are things that the first couple of weeks of the season, you kind of expect that, especially when you got new rules in place and new ways of seeing things, and you got spotters and what have you. So the first couple of weeks, you expect these kind of mistakes. But towards the end of the season, like we're in November now, but like you're talking about like being in late October with a game like this, and you still can't seem to get this call right. It really just casts a bad image on you, as far as I'm concerned. And like I said, it's unfortunate, really. There's just no other way to really describe it, because you want to be mad, but at the same time, you're like, oh, well, you know, poor league, what are you going to do? Like, and it shouldn't even come to that point. Like, I mean, how many times have we seen this year where teams are just being jobbed because the referees just don't seem to have a clue? And it's frustrating. I guess it would be the best way to describe it. As a fan, to sit and watch that, to spend your hard-earned money on this league, and this is what you're getting in return? Like, that's insulting, quite frankly.
Yeah. I would imagine that there may be some sort of an overhaul for the off season when it comes to how these mistakes, that's what they are, these mistakes can be corrected, and that they don't happen to show up as much as they have in 2017. But would it be a fly in the wall in the CFL offices in the off season?
Oh, absolutely.
So we have, it's the last game of the 2016 season for the Montreal Alouettes. We're not sure as of taping who is going to be the starter. We know it's either going to be Rakeem Cato or it's going to be Vernon Adams Jr. They go up against the Hamilton franchise, which from what we're understanding, it seems to be that everybody except for the quarterback is going to be resting. I guess that's the best way to put it.
Well, and again, I definitely get the strategy behind it. And for the most part, it does make sense because, again, this is, like you said, essentially a preseason game. It's going to have that kind of preseason feel to it because Montreal's got nothing to play for. If anything, they'll just want to spoil the party and maybe try to, you know, get that seventh win. That'd be great if they can. But at the same time, we know they're not going to make the playoffs. We know that Hamilton will make the playoffs. So they're definitely going to do everything they can to not get hurt. And yeah, that's just the way this league works out sometimes as far as the playoffs go, and as far as this could have been a really intense matchup had a couple more things gone Montreal's way, but it is what it is, and now we're stuck in this situation. So yeah, I definitely don't blame Hamilton for deciding to rest most of their starters. It's probably the best way to go, and also too, give some reps to some other guys as well, which I'm always a big fan of. You know, see what you want to see what you have depth wise in a team. So if I'm a Hamilton fan, I'd be disappointed not to see certain players play and that, but you know what? You got to believe that your coaching staff knows what's best and wants to put their best foot forward for the playoffs, not necessarily for a nothing game against a team that's not even going to be in the playoffs. So
right. And
I get that.
This would be Coach Chapp's inaugural game, first game versus the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And it's interesting, you know, it's ever since the Alouettes beat the Hamilton Tiger Cats, when was it? They beat them on, was it eight? It was August of 2015?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was August, or am I, do I have the wrong date here?
Yeah, August 2015.
Yeah, August 2015, when they beat them, that was their first loss ever, if I remember correctly, at Tim Hortons Field. And since then, Hamilton's been beatable. They've been beatable at the old donut shop, haven't they?
They have, actually. And Montreal has actually posted multiple victories at Tim Hortons Field. Last year, they had two victories, despite only playing Hamilton once there.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah?
I had forgotten about that. Yeah, they played Toronto there. I'd forgotten about that. I was like, what are you talking about? It's not showing up here for Hamilton. Oh, yes, that's right.
So, I mean, Montreal knows how to win in this stadium, so it's definitely conceivable to post yet another victory.
Mm-hmm.
It just comes down to just how bad do you want it versus, like, who all Hamilton will be playing as well. So, I mean, I won't say it's a gimme by any stretch because the end of the day, Hamilton will want to come out and be strong as well and get the fans excited for the Eastern semifinal and at least give them a little taste of what they can expect, you know, next week and hopefully beyond that. whereas Montreal is just going to go out there and give it their best effort and see what the future holds, essentially, because, like I said, it's going to be either Rakeem Cato or Vernon Adams playing. One of those guys is going to be the future quarterback for the Montreal Alouettes, and this is just going to be another test for them, as well as for Jacques Chaplin, who currently now sits at 3-2 as Alouettes head coach.
Yep, and got another I can't say a vote of confidence at this week's post-game press conference from Alouettes owner Robert Wettenhall, but he was pleased at what's happening.
Absolutely, and again, if Chaplin can finish this year at 4-2, I mean, that just makes an even stronger case for him to be considered as the full-time head coach of the Alouettes, and I'd have to say, based on everything I've seen so far, it would necessarily be a terrible choice. I mean, there's a big part of me that wants to say, you know what, just clean house, get rid of everybody, start over fresh. But I mean, with the way that Chaplin's been preparing his team and getting them motivated enough to play, it's not easy to get these guys motivated considering that they're not going to make the playoffs, but he's found a way to do so, and he's managed to get them to buy in. So I'll give him a lot of credit for that. I think this was a long time coming. I think he should have been a head coach quite some time ago, and I believe he feels the same way. But now this is his chance to prove that he does belong in that discussion, and we'll see what happens for next year. But yeah, there's a big part of me that's thinking, you know what? If Chaplin is given every tool for success, and I think that it will also include hiring his own staff, not just being forced to keep certain coaches on the staff.
Right, right.
I definitely think you could make an argument that Chaplin could be the coach of the future for Montreal, at least for next year anyways. And we'll see how this rebuilding goes once again.
No, it's true. It's just a matter of obviously with this game, everybody's going to be – they always say this. It's a foregone conclusion that everybody's going to be they're playing for 2017 and a spot on the roster for next year. So, for those that are going to return, it will be, I too would like to see them have their seventh win. It would be nice to see them, technically be finished tied for second place. Even one win is an improvement, you know, than the previous year. So it's seven is better than six.
That's true. I mean, think about it, especially with how poorly Montreal had played throughout this year overall. I mean, I think there's even some talk that maybe even getting to 6-12 would have been a milestone achievement. But now they have the chance to become 7-11, which, again, is still nothing to be proud of. Don't get me wrong. But considering all of the malaise that this team has suffered through this year for any number of reasons, to be able to get to 7-11 and, like you said, tie with Hamilton for second place, mm-hmm. technically, is an achievement of sorts. Yes. And yeah, there's no prize that goes with it. There's no special reward, but I mean, it's still an accomplishment at the end of the day. And like right. I said, it's a look towards the future to see what's going to be happening, whether
they're going to get a participation yeah. award, you know?
Yeah. Hopefully, whoever makes the playoffs will be nice. And for next season, we'll make us a whole bunch of participation ribbons for,
that'd be nice. If not, I'm sure the guys over at Edmonton can go ahead and give us some, you know,
Gold star. That's what we got.
Gold star. Better. It's better than the poop emoji that we've had most of the year. So
true that. You know. True that.
It's gone from poop emoji to cake. I don't know. I'm trying to think. There's so many damn emojis out there, and if you have iOS or if you have Android, they're all different anyway. So it's just not the poop emoji.
Yeah.
It's just not the poop emoji. Quick reminder. I think they're going to come out next week. By the way, we are going to have a show. We don't know if next week is going to be our finale or not, but we're looking to line up some things for next week and maybe a couple weeks beyond that. But we'll let you guys know. Make sure you check all of our social media feeds to see all the information, whether it be Twitter or on Facebook. Twitter being at Alouettes FL Deck or over at Facebook at Alouettes Flight Deck. Also, do not forget that you can listen to any of our shows, all of our last 20 shows for the year, over at Podbean or over at Google Play Music or over at iTunes. And don't forget, if you have a chance, make sure you give a thumbs up and let us know that you like the show. Also, I think starting next week, we talked about this last week, the CFL Awards, I think, will be – the voting will occur, and it will be done via Twitter – hence the CFL Twitter Awards. What a concept, right? I think from what I'm understanding is that we are one of the 10 nominees for Favorite Podcast of the Year. I think we're all nominated, by the way. But we'll let you know. And if you can, just if you give us a – we love to get the award. But if we don't, it's just – as I said, once we see the final nominations, it'll be nice to see the – we are a nominee, right, Cliff?
We certainly are. And for everyone who's been voting for us, thank you so much. We definitely appreciate it. I mean, just the fact that we are having a chance to entertain you all, and if you think we're that entertaining that we deserve a vote, well, like I said, we definitely appreciate it. So there's no question. There's lots of great podcasts out there, and any one of these guys would be more than deserving to win this award. And if it ends up being us, that'd be awesome too, and we'd share it with everybody. But no matter what, you can't go wrong with pretty much any of these guys in the CFL podcast family, guys and gals, I should say. But if you do want to throw a vote our way, we definitely appreciate it. Just go to @CFLTAwards for more information. Just look for the hashtag. I think it's Fave Podcast Account.
I think.
And
yeah.
if you want to nominate us, then like I said, definitely appreciate it. We appreciate the love, and
David,
we're all for it.
I think look out for next week, next Monday. I think specifically where they're going to announce all the nominees for all the. For all of the finalists, I guess we can say.
Mm-hmm.
Cliff, I know. I think you just put it out. If anybody hadn't read it, where can they read your Owlsternative?
Best place to find it is the original home of the Owlsternative. You can go to www.owlsternative.com.
Perfect. So we'll see you guys next week. If you have any questions, you can go ahead and email me. Via our email address. It's owlwoodspodcast@gmail.com. Same thing with Cliff, and we'll be more than happy to respond back to you guys as quickly as possible.
Yeah, so, and you can also hit us up on Twitter as well. For Tim, that would be @repact, R-E-P-A...
R-E-P-P-A-C-T.
C-T. Or you can hit me up at Cliffy D.
You had to spell that too?
No, I'm not doing well in the spelling today, clearly.
Perfect. All right.
Tongue-tied, I guess.
Yeah.
I was excited about the win, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Winning streak. Woo!
Yeah, winning streak. Not only that, not only do we have now a winning streak, mm-hmm. Even though two games, it's still a winning streak, mm-hmm. but we actually beat the best team in the league. I don't care if they put like half their players out there or sat their all-star quarterback. It doesn't matter. A win's a win, baby. And yeah. We beat the Stampeders, which is pretty exciting. But you know what? Don't take it from me. Let's talk to our old – you know what?
No, don't. No, don't you dare. I'm going to veto you this week because we did that. We lost. Well, no, Kirk Cousins is a curse.
Yeah, I am sick and tired of that mother screwing us over this season. You know what? That's who I blame. Every time we get a win and I try to show this guy some love and this is how we get repaid. So guess what? Kirk Cousins.
Perfect. Too bad again. Too bad there's not a vote for an CFL Twitter Award for the best way to get rid of swearing. I know. Anyways, for everybody here at Owl Wins Flight Deck, for Cliffy D, I'm Tim Capper. We're on Final Approach.